Welcome to The Buzz. I'm Christopher Conover. This week, we hear from Tucson City Council candidates. Tucson City Council elections have been a clean sweep for Democrats since 2009 when then-Republican Steve Kozacik won a seat on the council. He switched parties a year later. This is the third time since then that every seat up for grabs has a Republican challenger on the ballot. It also has a third-party candidate in one race, something that happens in most Tucson elections. What you'll hear today are edited versions of our interviews. You can find those complete interviews on our website. We begin today's show by speaking with the incumbents. Lane Santa Cruz is completing their first term representing Ward 1 on the Tucson City Council, and Paul Cunningham has been on the council since he was appointed to fill a vacancy in 2010. Absent from our conversation was Nikki Lee. We offered her campaign a variety of days and times, but none were compatible with her schedule. Our conversation starts with Paul Cunningham.
So what I'm really excited about right now is that with the RTA plan and with the road plan that we've just passed, we now are pretty much going to touch every single corridor road and residential road over the next decade. Not only that, when I took office, some 80% of the roads in Tucson were failing. That number is around 50%. In Ward 2, every single corridor has been treated. So I kind of reject the idea that every single road needs to be fixed, especially in Ward 2. Finally, we've done 16 out of 33 neighborhoods in Ward 2, and we're ready to start the next process. I know that people say roads because it's really easy to see, but I think we have bigger challenges right now. We have challenges with affordable housing. There's a fentanyl crisis that's hit the entire United States. We also have some public safety and some community wellness concerns that we have to address.
Lane, let me let you jump in on roads quickly.
Yeah, so in 2021, our office set an ambitious goal to knock on 10,000 doors so that we could hear from residents what their issues and priorities were that they wanted us to be working on. And what we heard time and time again was roads. It was repaving their neighborhood streets. But then they also had safety-related concerns. They wanted better lighting. They wanted better crosswalks. They wanted sidewalks that weren't buckled or that were continuous. They wanted routes for their kids to get to school and to the park safely. And so that was part of what we lobbied for with Prop 411, to make sure that it wasn't just making sure every residential street got repaved, but that there was safety considerations that were part of it. Because now when the corridors that have been repaved, now we're having drag racing. Now there's other issues that have come up. So we have to always be thinking about the environment and how we build it out to incorporate safety so that we're not doing it on the back end, because we've had an unprecedented number of deaths this year for pedestrians on our roads.
So let's talk about the other big issue that I always hear about in the public: homelessness and affordable housing. Realistically, what can the city do? As a member of the city council, what can you do?
We've been in Ward 1, we've been using city-owned property for affordable housing projects, not just affordable housing, but mixed income, mixed use projects, so that when families are moving into the neighborhood, they have all the things that they need, especially access to transit or jobs and whatnot. Other cities were doing housing first 15 years ago, and we've just started implementing some of that to get folks housed rapidly. But then we also had the pandemic along with our housing costs going up. And what we've seen now is an unprecedented number of seniors not being able to afford housing. Our responsibility is to provide safety nets and be planning ahead, but the planning ahead, it can't be a band-aid and it takes time.
Paul, you want to jump in on this?
Yeah, a couple things about the housing crisis. This is something that's not unique to Tucson. No one has figured it out yet. It's not like there's some silver bullet. Oh, gee whiz. The bottom line is this is systemic. We cannot be successful unless the federal, state, county, and city governments are on the same page and we have a continuum of care and a systemic program that addresses all of our needs. We have folks that are unhoused, partially because of addiction and mental health issues. We have folks that are underhoused. They're jumping from couch to couch. They're going from place to place. And then we have folks that are in shelter that actually can afford housing. They just can't afford some of the overpriced housing. We have to have programs for each one of them, and it doesn't work unless all the other places are doing their best. We can't address fentanyl. We can't address addiction unless we have a proper number of detox facilities and detox beds when it comes to public health. We can't address alleged criminal activity when it's connected to the unhoused, which sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. But the bottom line is that if we don't have a proper facility for holding and for interviewing people and for allowing law enforcement to do part of what its job is safely, then we can't be successful. So this whole thing is systemic, and we have to, all pistons have to be firing for everything to work. We've done a great job in the city in that we've added personnel to police. We have an extra 400 civilian employees that we didn't have before in outreach every single day. We've added to the social services system. We've taken 800 people off the streets and put them into permanent housing within the last year. So we're doing our part, but if we don't have the rest of the system backing us up, it's really tough to really see progress.
So Paul, you mentioned fentanyl as an issue contributing to a lot of other things. You mentioned adding civilian officers into the police force who are not sworn officers. We're still short on police officers, and some people say there's low pay. How do you, as again, city council members, deal with all of that?
So I'm going to push back a little bit and say that our pay is pretty competitive for the region. I think we've done a pretty good job in trying to take care of it. I also stand by our officers. I know that sometimes morale's down, but we've got a really great group of people working in the police department. I also want to acknowledge that in prior decades, there was a culture for police that wasn't necessarily the best. And I don't know how much of it prevailed in our department, but right now I think we have a great group of people, and I think we've got a good chief, and I think we're in the right spot there. That being said, one of the reasons that we can't get more sworn officers is that we can't get people to pass background. We can't get people through the academy. That's actually the bigger challenge. It isn't a money or resource problem. That's why we created these civilian positions. We have 125 community service officers who are responding to low-level calls. We want to make sure we're able to respond to the calls that are out there. And I think we've done everything we possibly can as far as putting resources in and trying to find creative ways to add personnel and resources in that program.
Yeah, to just build on what Paul was saying about some of the hurdles that people trying to become police officers are facing, especially around the testing, is that a lot of that is also legislated at the state level. There's also been challenges with trying to get people to want to become police officers. And so nobody talks about that. They think it's a funding thing. There are those positions are there. I think the other one too, that we have expected our police department to do everything. I mean, I've been having this, my own struggle too with my parents, because my dad has stage 4 cancer. But my mom's first urge is to call 911 for every little, like the blood pressure dropped or has a fever, because she doesn't know how to navigate these tricky situations. And so I've been like, Mom, you just got to go to the emergency room. I think a lot of us don't know how to manage some emergency crisis types of situations, that I think we can do a better job educating our community. We also have the 311 system that we're putting in line to help folks navigate when it's not an emergency type of situation. I also think that at the end of the day, we don't lean on some of our neighbors or other people in our neighborhoods for help or support, because we're so isolated. I think we can go a lot into why we're seeing the issues around addiction and self-medication, because we're losing just that sense of community. And so I think part of our community safety or public safety is also making sure that all the other, like that our parks, that our roads, that our schools, that everything is working the way it should, because I think they all have a role in public safety.
And to jump off on that, we should also celebrate where we're successful in public safety. I think we're the only fire department in the state right now that's fully staffed, and I stand by our firefighters. We're doing a lot of this stuff right. A lot of the challenges we have are challenges that are familiar to other communities, and I think we're just going to continue to drive on and address them the best we can, one at a time.
All right. Well, thank both of you for spending some time with us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Paul Cunningham and Lane Santa Cruz, the Democratic incumbents in the Tucson City Council race. As we mentioned at the start of the show, this year's ballot includes a full slate of Republicans. Victoria Lem is a realtor. Ernie Schack works with a nonprofit that helps homeless veterans. And Ross Kaplowitz is the owner of a local trucking company. Our interview begins with Kaplowitz, who's also a former corrections officer. He says he was compelled to run after a family tragedy.
My 22-year-old daughter at the time found her mother bludgeoned to death. Previous reports of domestic violence that I helped her file, we got responses that due to resources, it does not meet our criteria. On May 2nd, 2022, Lily, my oldest, asked me for a key to her mother's apartment. And I gave it to her. And she went in the apartment because Tucson Police Department had her waiting for 2 hours for a welfare check. There was a trail of blood to the bathroom, and that's where she found her mom that probably been laying there for at least 20 to 24 hours.
Crime, public safety, obviously, you're in or and have been in public safety, and as you mentioned, hit your family in a very personal way. What can the city council do to improve morale, but also get recruitment numbers up? And not only recruitment numbers, but retention numbers.
So Tucson Police Department is approximately 11 to 13% behind in salary from another city of our size. So we need not only to give our first responders a raise, but our water department and our Department of Transportation are all underpaid. And I've listened to the water department as we walk into the city council meetings, and they'll say 30 to 40%, and they can't retain anybody. But going back to first responders, it seems like the city of Tucson only wants to recruit locally. We need to do a nationwide recruiting and show people that Tucson is a beautiful city.
Victoria, what do you see as, for you, as the top issues that, as a member of the city council, you got to tackle and fix?
We're all have about the same priorities here. But as a realtor, I'm a residential and commercial realtor, it makes it really hard to sell homes and to sell commercial properties to people when there's encampments behind them. Recently, I just lost a deal. Someone from San Francisco, one of the buying partners, came out and said, sorry, we're going to back out of this deal. Tucson looks to be struggling a lot more. It's too risky for us. They came from San Francisco. So it's surprising, right? So, but this is the type of environment that we're dealing with now.
So let me ask, because you all have mentioned crime, and two of you have mentioned the homeless situation specifically. Mm-hmm. So how does the city council mm-hmm. solve the homeless situation? Or maybe not solve it, mm-hmm. but at least start working on it?
There's a very big difference between a homeless situation where somebody's hard on their luck, just, you know, maybe they're couch surfing at the moment to get back on their feet. It's a very different situation than someone who chooses to be in an environment where they can utilize illicit drugs open in the public, in public spaces, and criminalize residential and commercial properties in order to get money to pay for their next hit, right? The way that the city council has created this is by not enforcing our laws, our panhandling laws, at not allowing our officers to move criminals through the system, through the justice system, and actually holding them accountable for the things that they're doing.
You know, my son did Boy Scouts 10 years ago, and we used to go to Lakeside Park and go fishing with the Boy Scouts. And now they're finding bodies in cars, whether they're suicide or fentanyl overdoses. So the parks are not safe to bring our children to now. And that's part of fixing our city. And I want to be able to take my 3-year-old daughter to the park and enjoy what I did with my 11, 14, 16, and 23-year-old. We need to give the parks back to our community.
You all mentioned in the beginning of this interview something I think I have heard almost as long as I have lived here, which is getting on close to 20 years now, roads. We have bond money that was passed by the voters a couple of years ago, but we have a lot of work to do. Ernie, I'm going to let you start off on this. What should the priority be to get the roads fixed? Because they all need to be fixed.
Absolutely. I think they need to be redone. Fixing the potholes, which need to be done as well, that's a temporary thing, because the potholes will eventually become potholes again. In addition to what you said earlier, I think the last election cycle, they raised our taxes a half cent for roads. So we need to assess, Grant, between Alvernahan and Swan, a car is not fit to drive on that. It's a truck road only, and probably a four-wheel drive. How long has that been? I moved here 4 years ago, and that's how I entered the city, on that road. And I'm like, really?
Victoria, how do we fix the roads?
We've been dealing with this for a long time. It's interesting that we've been dealing with it for, 4, 8, 12, 16 years, which is about the same as some of these city council members have been on this board. We've watched these potholes just grow. I've had to switch cars because my previous car, which I still have, don't drive it, but previous car had lower profile wheels. Kept slamming into them. They kept cracking my rims. I kept having to have those fixed, and I can't afford doing that. And that it's unfortunate. We've had situations here with a motorcyclist that mm-hmm. passed away, and they're attributing it to hitting a pothole and losing control. We're not just dealing with pedestrians getting hit. We're dealing with people getting injured and our vehicles getting damaged constantly because of this. It's just not fun, honestly. You can't attract businesses. You can't attract residents who want to move here, work here at our great, the great employers, the large employers that we have here already. We can't attract people to stay because we're not even doing the right thing.
You bring up prioritize the budget and paying police officers more, paying the water department more, mm-hmm. fixing the roads, dealing with the homeless, which goes, as you all have said, with the police and things like that. So where do we get the money? Is it changes in the way we're spending, or, I hate to say it, do taxes have to be redone? Ernie's shaking his head the hardest, so I'm going to start with Ernie.
We reapportion. No increases in taxes. There's money in the coffers to do what has to be done. Mm-hmm. Taxes were enacted in 2017, last year a half cent. There's money. The four of us are committed. We are definitely on the same page to do what has to be done to bring Tucson back where it should be.
On the reapportionment, is there a particular program that you say, that's the first one I'm suggesting when the budget comes around, that goes away so we can move the money to one of these other priorities?
Well, there's plenty of waste that's been spent and programs that are totally not necessary. So those would be where I would be reapportioning.
We have to remember that our mayor shut down our city, shut down our small businesses, and a lot of those small businesses went away. Where do you think some of our tax money was coming from? From these businesses, right? And when we shutter businesses, or we've created a place where they cannot be successful, where we've created so much red tape that they look to other cities instead of Tucson to run their small businesses, their family, even local people who want to start these small businesses. If we cannot get them running businesses, we can't have the additional tax dollars in order to help continue to fund our city and our infrastructure. But we also need to remind our city council and mayor that in the city charter, they're responsible for three things: the safety of our community, our recreation and parks, and our infrastructure. But we see a lot of push for other items on their agendas, creating road diets and the North to Sur initiatives, planting a million trees. Why are we focusing on the things that would be nice to haves, maybe, instead of the foundational things that will keep the heartbeat of the city running?
Russ, let me let you have last word on this budget. So how do you reallocate the budget without raising taxes to get the things done that you all want to get done?
We need to look at where the unnecessary spending is being done. So we would actually, when we're elected here in November, take that budget and take where the money is and be fiscally responsible. We need to triage our priorities at this time because of what is going on. And once we triage our priorities and fix the city to attract those businesses, then we can be concerned about everything else.
All right. Well, the three of you, thank you so much for coming in, sitting down.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was Victoria Lem, Ernie Schack, and Ross Kaplowitz, the Republican Party nominees in this year's Tucson City Council races. This year's Tucson election also features Libertarian Pendleton Spicer. She's a psychologist who joins Ernie Schack in challenging incumbent Paul Cunningham. I started by asking her what she sees as the top issue for the city.
Of course, homelessness and crime are big issues. Potholes are a big issue. What the Democrats haven't done is a big issue. So those are the big issues. So do you want me to go on from there or?
Sure. Let's break them down a little bit. Let's talk about homelessness and crime. I don't think we can solve it in the next few minutes, but if you can, give a bit of an overview of what you think needs to be done going forward to begin solving those issues.
Well, I think the first thing that would help solve the issue is to give the police the power to do their job. That power, I believe, has been taken away from them. Morale is terrible in the department. They don't have enough staff. They don't have enough people to do the things that need to be done. To me, that's one piece of government that I think needs to be there, is to protect the citizenry. And they're not able to do it. Their hands are tied in too many ways. The homelessness, we've had a problem with homelessness, but it was exacerbated by COVID. Locking people down is not an answer to me in any way, shape, or form. And it took away people's paychecks in too many instances. And so a lot of people ended up on the street because their homes got taken away from them. They had no longer had an income. What do? You end up on the street. And then when you end up on the street, a lot of times they get involved in drugs, which they may never have done before. Arresting people for using drugs solely as that's the only thing that they're doing and they're not committing an actual crime, I think they should be left alone unless they want help. And if they want help, then the private sector needs to be brought in. I don't think that the government, the city government, should be caring up for these people. We need to bring in the private sector, whether it's churches, other organizations. There are all kinds of organizations out there that want to help these people. I don't think the city can do that job.
So you also mentioned roads, and as long as I've been here, which is almost 20 years now, it seems like every time we bring up city elections and in between, candidates say, we're going to fix the roads. Well, here we are in the 20 years almost I've been here, and there are still potholes and all kinds of things.
And bond after bond after bond that's not getting spent. in the way that they tell us they're going to spend it.
Is that the issue that you see it as? It's not spending the money correctly, or is there another problem?
I think that's probably part of it. But they just don't have, they don't see it as a priority. Apparently, they don't care if their cars fall apart. I don't exactly know why it is that they aren't doing it. And they say, we've done all this paving and all this stuff. I'm in the ward. Where? You know, I see a few things done, but it doesn't seem to be their priority. Their priority seems to be finding some way to control human beings. And they talk about doing the traffic calming and, you know, narrowing roads. Well, we've got too many people to narrow roads. And this isn't a city that does well with public transportation, you know, like San Francisco. I mean, that's where I got my master's. San Francisco, it does. It just seems to be that they don't have the priorities that need to be there. And creating these narrow roads with tons of traffic is not the answer. More bike lanes. There are a few hardcore people, but who's going to ride their bike to work when it's 110 degrees out? The way I see it, they're looking to create smart cities, which is putting us into prisons that we don't even know we're in.
All right. Well, thanks for spending some time with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I really appreciated it.
That was Pendleton Spicer, the Libertarian candidate running for Ward 2's city council seat. You can find the full interviews with all the candidates on our website. While you're there, you can also go back to last week's show when we interviewed the candidates for Tucson mayor. And that's The Buzz for this week. You can find all our episodes online at azpm.org and subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for The Buzz Arizona. We're also on the NPR app. Zach Ziegler is our producer with production help from Desiree Tucker. Our music is by Enter the Haggis. I'm Christopher Conover. Thanks for listening.
Arizona Public Media's original programming is made possible in part by the Community Service Grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.